Oasis on 2FM.
Yes, well, a big thank you to the two Johnnies for kicking off the Easter Bank holiday weekend in entertaining fashion. It is Friday, April 7th. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up this evening, Stephen Kelly and Alan Colley preview a big weekend of association football both here in the League of Ireland and over in the English Premier League. Greg Allen has the latest from the Masters at Augusta. Ross Munnelly marks the return of championship football with provincial championships throwing in this weekend. Michael Corcoran is standing by on Lansdowne Road ahead of Leinster's Champions Cup quarterfinal clash against Leicester. Jane Mangan has an eye on the weekend's racing, and I'll have all the latest sports news headlines. All that between now and 7pm makes up a good Friday. Game On. As always, if you want to get your have your say, send us a text 51552 or tweet us at Game On 2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Yes, hello there, good evening. I hope you're enjoying your Friday evening. Looking forward to a nice long weekend filled with sport, no doubt. Let us dive straight in to a golf with Greg Allen, who is standing by live at Augusta, Georgia. And Greg, I'm delighted to be teeing you up, excuse the pun, on a question about golf rather than the weather.
Well, actually, you can tee me up for a question on the weather in about an hour and 10 minutes from now. That's when the storm is, not storm, but certainly the rain, the potential for thunderstorms is due to hit Augusta. We've had really fine conditions this morning, and this was a perfect opportunity for Rory McIlroy to get under par and start eking his way back towards the lead. But what's happened, he's gone the other direction, and he's had four bogeys in his first 10 holes, and he's now in a situation where he needs birdies just to have a chance of making the cut. Much worse than that is the distance between where he is on four over par and where the lead is on 12 under par, 16 strokes. I think we can say that this Masters will be one that's another year gone for McIlroy in terms of his hopes of finally donning a green jacket, the one major championship that he hasn't won, four over after 10. And some of the bogeys that he's made, wayward drives into trees, chipped shots which have gone through the green in the third and only went a few feet on the second. He's just been totally out of sorts. So he's four over par after 10. Brooks Koepka, though, is the man. He has just posted a round of 67. The four-time major champion in the last 7 years, back to form after his knee surgery from around 2 years ago, is finally recovered and recuperated completely. He looks awesome, to be brutally honest, the way he's played for the first 2 days. Today was a beautiful round of golf. He birdied three of the par fives and eagled the eighth, the fourth of the par fives in terms of the course that he's played today. And a 67, no bogeys, following on a 65 from yesterday. Brooks Koepka is on 12 under par, three strokes clear of another player who's been rejuvenated after injury, Jason Day. He's had terrific or serious back problems over the years, and he's rebuilt his swing to compensate really for those back problems, and it looks like it's firing well. He's been playing well for the last few months, and Day on 9 under par is three strokes behind Koepka, and Day is 4 under for the 14 holes he's played today, playing a beautiful round of golf. So Koepka 12 under, Day 9 under, and then on 7 under Victor Hovland and John Rahm, who have yet to start. And then among those in the top 10, fortunately, is Shane Lowry, who remains on course for a good Masters, a 4 under par 68 yesterday, and he's just birdied the par 5 second hole to move to 5 under par, and he's tied for 6th place. Also on the course just is Seamus Power in the match directly after Lowry, and Power is one over par after one, a par at the first hole, and also Matt McLean, the amateur, level par for the 8 holes he's played today, and 5 over par for the Masters. So the story here, Brooks Koepka not running away with it at the top, but setting the clubhouse target for the halfway point here with a round of 67 at 12 under par, a 3-stroke lead over Jason Day, and the big news, Rory McIlroy, 4 over par after 10 holes.
Great stuff, Greg. We'll be chatting before 7pm. Thank you very much for dialing in live from Augusta, Georgia.
Game On.
Rugby.
Now, let us chat rugby, because Leinster are in Heineken Champions Cup quarterfinal action at home to Leicester this evening. A match that you can hear live commentary of on RT Radio 1. James Downey will be alongside Michael Corcoran, who joins me now. And Michael Corcoran, it is a reduced 27,000 capacity at the Aviva Stadium, but it's sure to be rocking on Good Friday evening.
It will. They took the decision to limit the attendance here to 27,000, just simply because of the fact that they were kind of caught between a rock and a hard place, if you understand. The capacity is bigger than the RDS, that is the reality, that only holds 18,000 people. But, you know, they would have had to open the top tier of the stand, even on a graduated basis. And that incurs additional costs with stewarding and Gardaí and everything like that. And given the fact that, you know, it's Good Friday, a lot of people, a lot of the demographic who support Leinster are probably gone away, even out of the country, down to the west of Ireland, down to the sunny southeast for the weekend. So that's why they've picked what they've picked or what they've chosen. So it'll be 27,000, and it's all the tickets are gone, and the vast majority of people who are here will be supporting Leinster. There are 500 people, 500 diehards, if I can call them that, from Leinster who have come over, and the majority of them have arrived over on the boat from Holyhead this afternoon. They're coming to the match and getting the return boat at 2:15 a.m. and that is to get around the high hotel prices that they were being quoted, and indeed flight situation as well. So fair play to the Leicester Tiger fans.
That's a proper away day.
It's a proper away day. I was talking to one of the lads from BBC Radio Leicester, and he said that I don't know who Leicester are playing tomorrow, but he said quite a few of them are heading back for to go to the Leicester football game on Saturday. So that's a proper weekend, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. So what will those 27,000 fans witness on the pitch? Are we expecting a tight affair, but ultimately a Leinster victory?
I mean, if you can think back to the Ireland-England game a couple of weeks ago in the Six Nations Championship, think of that match and think how England stifled Ireland for a long period of time and for long periods of that game. So the England head coach is Steve Borthwick, who was the man who brought that plan in when he was the head coach of Leicester up to a couple of months back. So I'm expecting that Leicester are going to try something similar against Leinster. Now, it was very much a Leinster kind of slightly below par effort from them last week, given the fact that you know, they were in a situation where they hadn't played together since that game in the Six Nations Championship. They had the following week off, celebrating and whatnot. So last week was their first game back. They did a big job in Ulster in horrific conditions, and I must say the conditions here are at the opposite end of the scale. Those who are fortunate enough to be in the far side, you know, the remnants of the evening sun are over there, but I mean, the sun is shining here. The pitch is Magella, the head's groundsman, has the place looking in fantastic condition. And they're expecting, I mean, so what will they witness? They'll witness Leinster at their best. That's the reality about it. Up against a Leicester team with a fair degree of international sprinkled into it as well, too. Anthony Watson and Freddie Stewart playing on the wing, with Mike Brown at 37 years of age playing at full back. So it'll be interesting to see how he copes, or whether he's good at this level again. He was once upon a time at playing for Harlequins in England at full back, but his career has gone a different direction since then. It's obviously a Leinster team without Johnny Sexton and without Josh van der Fleer. That's a World Player of the Year and a World Player of the Year nominee. But Leinster, well, they cope, and they've learned to cope over the years. Ross Byrne slots in alongside Jemison Gibson-Park. Caelan Dara is unusual to see him wearing jersey number 7. Leo Cullen assures me that he's done that before with sort of half a twinkle in his eye. He hasn't started a match at number 7. He may have filled in that position, but Leinster back row of Ryan Baird, Caelan Dorris and Jack Conan could do some damage here at the Aviva Stadium. It's the first of the quarterfinals, so there's a kind of a good feel about it. Because it's Good Friday, people have the rest of the weekend off, and I think I'm not expecting a rip-roaring cracker of a match. I think it'll be an arm wrestle, but I think Leinster will come out on top ultimately.
My final question to you, Michael, just on that, mightn't be a rip-roaring match, might be a bit of an arm wrestle. There's been a narrative around Leicester's style of play and how they will approach it. Will they want to just get in their faces and make it a really dirty arm wrestle and not let Leinster play that free-flowing rugby?
I think that's about the only chance they have. You know, I mean, if you look at their front row, James Cronin, the former Munster player, in the front row with Julian Montoya, the Argentinian international, with Joe Hayes, the England international. That's their front row. They have Jack Van Portvliet, who was the England scrum half here a couple of weeks back. Andre Pollard, the South African outside half, played with the Bulls of Montpellier. He's very much a kicking player. And the fact that they have chosen Freddie Stewart, who played full back for England, he was sent off, remember, and that was reversed a couple of weeks back. So they've him on one wing. He's 6'5", so if you're putting a 6'5" fella on the wing rather than full back, he's kind of there for the aerial route, and that's a point that Leo Cullen spoke about yesterday. So they will certainly try and bombard Ulster up high. Basically, you've 6'5" Freddie Stewart up against Jimmy O'Brien, who's very good in the air as well, it must be said, the County Kildare man at just over 6 foot there. So I think it'll be a bit tactical for a while, but I do expect Leinster are going to win it and book their place in the semi-final of the competition.
Okay, great stuff, Michael Corcoran. Thank you very much. As I mentioned earlier on, Michael Corcoran will be on live commentary duty alongside James Downey just before 8 p.m. We'll be on air on RTE Radio 1 for that one. Before we take a break and preview GA Championships and preview League of Ireland matches and English Premier League, a bit of cricket news. And unfortunately, Ireland remain without a win in Test cricket after Bangladesh secured a 7-wicket victory on day 4 of the one-off test in Mirpur. Ireland made 259 for the loss of just 4 wickets across day 3, recovering from 27 for 4 to spark hopes of an unlikely triumph. Andy McBrien was key to their hopes overnight, resuming unbeaten on 71, having entered at 123 for 6. However, he was only able to add 1 to his overnight score, with Ireland losing 2 wickets for 6 runs on the final morning. That left Bangladesh needing 138 to win, which they easily secured after a loss of just 3 wickets. Ireland's test schedule continues against Sri Lanka, with a 2-match series beginning next Sunday. So hopefully things improve for Irish cricket. Okay, Ross Munley's up next and we're going to chat Gaelic football. And we may have Ross Munley very shortly, actually, because there's a few gremlins and we're not going to take a break. We're going to stay with you on Good Friday. We're going to change it up a little bit. It's Easter Bank Holiday weekend. Who needs the money on Easter Bank Holiday? We're going to stay with you and stay live, and we're going to chat Gaelic football, because it's mad to think Easter weekend and the championship is already throwing in, for want of a better phrase, if you don't want to say kicking off. And there are provincial matches across all 4 provinces. The Connacht Championship throws in with London and Sligo, and New York and Leitrim tomorrow. There's Ulster football, Armagh and Antrim, and then on Sunday, big one, Mayo Roscommon. And there are 3 matches in Leinster and 2 matches in Munster. And I'm delighted to say Ross Munley is on the line. Hopefully, Ross, how are you?
I'm good. I'm here indeed. I'm enjoying the sunshine, so there's a real championship feel to this weekend, and with the extra hour as well in the evening, I'm sure there'll be teams training all over the country and looking forward to their own respective championships. But great this weekend. We've got a feast of football. I don't know how we're going to cover it all in the next while, but we'll give it a good go anyway.
Well, that's why I dropped the break. So I was like, let's just chat football instead, Ross. Let's just dive straight in. Listen, provincial championships, like, before we get into the matches that I briefly kind of mentioned there, are they a thing of the past, or should we be retaining them, in your opinion?
I think this year is going to be a very big year for them. Speaking from somebody, I guess, who finished their career in the lower leagues, the provincials are a huge incentive to get to a final so that you can guarantee your chance at playing a shot at in the All-Ireland. Other than that, you're in the Tailteann Cup by merit, given your league status, depending on how you finish. So I think the big incentive is there. But at the moment, the provincials, because we're now going into this new phase of the championship, it's the second year of Tailteann, but obviously it's a reformatting of the main championship, if you like. I think the end of this year will be very telling, and at the moment it feels as if the provincials are definitely losing their power. They have been quite one-sided, with the exception of the Ulster Championship. And I guess let's see how this summer goes, but a lot of them look quite predictable at the minute.
Psychologically, will it be difficult for teams to get up for these provincial games when, in what, 5-6 weeks' time, we're going to be having the exact same conversation and looking forward to All-Ireland and Tailteann Cup competitions, saying, geez, we really have to big up now and get ready for these games, when you're just coming off the back of a league? Like Mayo, for example, as well, just off the back of a league, and now they've Mayo Roscommon, which we'll preview in detail. But in general terms, just mentally getting up for that, will that be a challenge, do you feel?
No, I don't think so. I really don't. And the main reason I think that is because once the league finished last year for us with Laois, I became very conscious that actually there's not that much left in the intercounty season. Because of the split season, you knew that obviously the end of the championship, both Tailteann and the All-Ireland, were a lot earlier in the summer. You now have that feel, as I said, and for me it's a big factor. The long evenings are in. You have that championship feeling about things at the moment. But over the next 2 months, a lot of teams are going to have probably the majority of their games played. Once you start getting into June and so on, so I think players will be very, very much focused on the fact that it's a new format in many ways across both, and there are games to win. And we've been crying out for years that teams, particularly in the weaker counties, are not playing enough games. So I think any player who's maybe unsure about whether they're up for a challenge this weekend, they're playing the wrong sport, because we've called for games, there are more games introduced, and to me it's an opportunity for teams to go out there and show what all the training has been. And as I said, let's see at the end of this championship what the pros and cons have been of it.
Might we see a few shocks, because some of the bigger teams, they're already assured of a place in the All-Ireland round-robin format? So I suppose that goes against your question of every team's going to be up for it, they're going to be peaking, they're going to be mentally prepared, but might we see a couple of upsets?
There's always a possibility. Like you look across any of the games. I don't know if you'd call them bigger teams versus smaller teams, but certainly the two games in London and New York this weekend are very interesting from that perspective. Probably for a lot of the games, because the league position where you finish, whether it be three or four, and coming up against a Division One or two teams, for me the gaps between in quality between teams in the divisions is probably at its largest. I wouldn't envisage a huge amount of shocks, but listen, it's championship, and who knows when teams take to the field. But I just think there's such a difference between the quality of teams at the moment. I wouldn't be holding out for a huge amount of shocks.
Okay, well, let us dive straight into the matches. Now, I did mention London Sligo, New York Leitrim is on tomorrow. Armagh Antrim is tomorrow evening as well. But Mayo Roscommon, and we spoke a lot about Mayo considering they're in the league final, and they have been going so well under Kevin McStay. But I do want to pick your brain on Roscommon. How impressed have you been with Davy Burke's Roscommon up to this point?
Yeah, I've been really impressed with them. I've been watching them throughout the league and been very impressed by their defensive displays. And on average, they've only been conceding 13 points per game. And I think that's something that I think the way the league finished, Galway was the only team with a better defence than them. So that tells you exactly what Roscommon are about at the moment. They're working as a unit. I'm not so sure, but in any of the games that they've played this year, they certainly haven't started their six most attacking forwards from what I've seen. They've always left some firepower on the bench to bring in. I expect it'll be the same this weekend. So I think they have really pulled together in terms of playing as a unit in how they defend and how they attack. And the statistics of that don't lie when you look at their, on average, scoring, they were scoring 15 points per game and conceding 13. So they were doing just enough to win and dragging teams into contests with them. And I think that's what Roscommon have to do this Sunday. It's a big, big ask for them going to McHale Park. Mayo have been outstanding in the league. Coincidentally, they've on average been conceding 15 points, which is the same as what Roscommon have been scoring. So from that perspective, you would imagine Roscommon will hit their scores this weekend. But crucially for Mayo, they've been scoring on average 18 per game, and that for me would be the worry for Roscommon in McHale Park. But looking at the league final last weekend, but for Reap in the goals, Roscommon could have conceded a couple of goals themselves, and Gaul would probably look at themselves as being a little bit unlucky. So I think from a Roscommon perspective, when you've got guys like Enda Smith and the Murtas who were able to break the line and bearing down on goal, you would always back them to score. So to me, that's the chance that Roscommon have this weekend. They have to hit the back of the net, and I'd imagine they need to get two goals.
Is it too lazy of a narrative to say it's a bit of a free shot for Roscommon, given all the attention, all the focus is on Mayo and how well they've gone, that this perhaps might be the best time to play with them, hopefully go under the radar a wee bit?
Yeah, I absolutely don't think Roscommon will be looking at this as a free shot. I think Roscommon will go into this game expecting to get a win. They had an excellent league at the start. I think it was three in a row they won, then they lost a couple, and then they won their last game. They finished with 8 table points. It was a very healthy league. I guess when these two teams played in the league, it was 2-11. Roscommon hit 2-11, Mayo scored 1-16, so they came out as 2-point victors. So I don't think Roscommon will be looking at this as a free hit at all. I think they'll be going to McHale Park with the objective of winning and believing that they're in a 50-50 shout. And if I was in that Roscommon dressing room, certainly looking at last weekend, yes, there are so many dangers from Mayo, their physicality, their fitness, their running, the Aidan O'Shea factor. But I think Roscommon will be going there with a belief that if they can score goals, which we know they're capable of, they're in with a shout of winning what they would see as a 50-50 game.
So with your impartial pundit hat on, call it for me, Ross.
I do think Mayo will prevail, having said all that. I think the home advantage is massive in this game. I think Mayo will pick up where they left off last week, but they will need to tighten up on their defence. And you know, you hear a lot of talk about playing so many weeks in a row and so on, and Barry Solon, who's the S&C coach with Arsenal, he worked with us with Leash, and he's a Mayo man, worked with Mayo, and I remember chatting to him about this and about the qualifiers a couple of years ago, and I was saying, will the build up of games be negative for a team? And he said, no, the opposite. If teams get used to playing week on week, it's far better than having 13 days between the games. So I think Mayo look to have mastered that in the last couple of years. And from that perspective, I think they're energised by playing week in, week out. And I just think the momentum is with them going into this weekend.
Okay, well, as I mentioned, Mayo Roscommon is live on RTE Television Sunday. Throw in at 4 p.m. The winner of that plays Galway in the Connacht semi-final. And as I mentioned as well, London, Sligo, New York and Leitrim are playing tomorrow evening in the quarter-finals of Connacht. And one of London, Sligo, New York and Leitrim will make a Connacht final, which is brilliant and good to see. Let us chat Ulster football and the preliminary round, Armagh Antrim, tomorrow evening, 5 p.m. Throw in the winners will play Cavan, and the winners of that will play Down or Donegal. So Armagh could, if they got to an Ulster final, well, will, if they do get to an Ulster final, avoid Tyrone, avoid Monaghan, avoid Derry and avoid Fermanagh, depending on who gets there as well, which will be pleasing, I'm sure, for Armagh fans not to face those teams until a final if they do get there. How big will the motivation be, and like extra will the motivation be, considering how Armagh's league campaign ended in Division 1 as they embark on this Ulster Championship?
Yeah, it'll be huge for them. I think it's quite a good game for them to get going. No disrespect to Antrim when I say that. They've conceded huge scores in the National Football League. I think it was just over 22 points on average per game, which is a huge concession. They stayed up in Division 3 by just that one point. And for them, that was important. But I do think that the league tables never lie. Armagh possibly unlucky to go down on the last day, but their athleticism and their powerful running, I think, is a huge asset for them this weekend, and particularly playing at home again. Like home, if you are favourites in the first place and you throw in home advantage on top of that, I think it makes it a very, very, very difficult task for the underdog. And I look at the Armagh team, and yes, they've been disappointed, but at times they play very direct running. They have long kick passing, into Mernan. They're able to conjure up scores when they need them. I'm thinking of their resurgence against I think it was Mayo in the league where they came back from the dead or whatever. So I don't think we should be writing off Armagh, and I do think they'll get off to a winning start this weekend. And as you said, a huge incentive given the side of the draw that they're on.
We'll save the best to last and we'll finish on Laois. But before we do, Ross, a double question for you on the Munster Championship. Tip play Waterford, but I want to focus on Clare v Cork. Is this a must win for both teams, and who do you feel will prevail?
It absolutely is a must win. I think there are possibly two teams maybe edging in opposite directions at the moment. One of my favourite managers of all time has to be Colm Collins and the job that he's done in Clare. And if you were picking a manager of the last decade in Gaelic football, he would absolutely be up there in contention for what he's done with that Clare team. Has been nothing short of brilliant. Unfortunately for them, they were defeated. They were relegated this year. But I look at their forwards. I look at Cleary, Sexton, Emmett McMahon hit 23 points in the league. Like just. Some really, really good players. But Cork, on the other hand, they'll probably be disappointed they didn't finish third in Division 2. They weren't going to outbattle Derry or Dublin in terms of promotion. And I think they're steadily trying to continue building. They had a good win over Clare in the league as well in Cusick Park. They beat them 3-10 to 1-8. So based on that, you would look at a Cork win this weekend. Stephen Sherlock has hit 32 points in the league. He was top scorer in the league in his league division last year as well. And when you look at the goals that Sean Powter has given in the league, he scored 4 goals in the league, showing that when he comes on the burst, he's very, very hard to stop. So I'd never write off any team managed by Colm Collins, but I do think Cork will go there and win this weekend. I just think that they have a little bit more at the moment.
And of course, they're on the other side of the Munster draw. The winners play Limerick, with Tip Waterford playing. The winners of that play Kerry. Let us finish on Leinster before I give you a couple of quick-fire predictions. So Wicklow, Carlow, Longford, Offaly and Laois, Wexford, with the winners having the small task of just overturning the Dubs. Be no bother to you, Ross.
That's it. Well, you look at the huge incentive. No, but all joking aside, it's fantastic to be. For I'm going to the game on Sunday, the Laois game, obviously enough, and they're playing Wexford. They had a fantastic battle in O'Moore Park a couple of weeks ago in the league. Obviously, Laois came out on top. In that one, I think it's going to be a very tight affair this Sunday. But the major incentive for the winner, I know it's playing Dublin, but they're going to have home advantage, and I think it would be very interesting for Laois to come out on Sunday, come out on top, and then welcome Dublin to O'Moore Park in a couple of weeks. But I do think this game against Wexford is going to be really difficult. Keane Hughes is an exciting young player. He came on against Laois in the league and caused us a problems in the last 10-15 minutes of that game. And Glenn Malone the whole time in that game, his driving runs from midfield, but I do think Laois will prevail. I think it'll be a tight one where both of them finished in the league, Laois in third place versus Wexford be fourth, so it'll be a tight one. But I expect the scoring influence of Evan O'Carroll, Paul Kingston, Mark Barry, Owen Lowry. I think they all finished in the top 15 scorers in the Division 4 standings at the end of it. So it showed the consistency of the four of them throughout the league. But I do think the loss of Brian Byrne for Laois, who has been, for me, one of the silent players of the year for Laois so far because of all his work off the ball, he'll be a huge loss. I don't see his name in the matchday squad. So speedy recovery to him if it's a serious injury.
Absolutely. Time is against us, Ross. So my final question, one word answer. We can't do an All-Ireland preview of the Championship without asking you who's going to win the All-Ireland.
Very difficult to say. I think for me, Mayo are the team that look the strongest at the moment, but certainly coming very, very strong behind them are the Galways, the Kerrys. And we were chatting a couple of weeks ago before Dublin played Derry in the league, and everyone was fancying Derry, and we were saying this Dublin team is gathering momentum each and every day it goes out, and I think Dublin could be dark horses yet, but too early to tell. We've only gone through the league, a lot of mixing and matching, but at the moment for me it's Mayo. Everyone is going to say Mayo because of their form, but I think walk us 5 or 6, 7 weeks down the road and we'll have a much clearer picture. But this Galway team is very, very, very impressive at the moment, and what impressed me most, and it's one to watch in their Connacht run now as well, is how mean their defence has been, and getting that balance between defence and attack is something that Dublin always did really well when they won All-Ireland. And I'm watching Galway at the moment. They're very methodical. But I'm saying Mayo because just they're swashbuckling at the moment with the way they're playing football.
Okay, great stuff. Ross Munley, thank you very much for taking the call. We're going to be chatting soccer after a quick break.
RTE
2FM.
Game on.
Football.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game On. Former Ireland international Stephen Kelly is sitting across from me. Stephen, how are you, sir?
Not too bad, yourself?
I'm very well, And Alan Cawley is also on the line. Alan, how are you, sir?
I'm good, Shane, and Stephen, all as well, thanks be to God.
Yeah, that's good. Makes good. A great change, doesn't it, from you being on the phone, me being in the studio, it's a bit different.
Roles reversed. Gentlemen, plenty of talking points in the Premier League, Frank Lampard, Liverpool, Arsenal, and so on. However, I think we just need to get a sting made there of just like, game on, Evan Ferguson. And let's just, you know, because it's just... It's been brilliant. And even now, there was a snippet in The Guardian, Rob Smith, and he wrote, the first game of Frank Lampard's first spell at Chelsea manager back in the summer of 2019 was a friendly against Bohemians in Dublin. He wasn't the only debutant. In the second half, Bohemians brought on a 14-year-old called Evan Ferguson to play up front. This wasn't a PR gesture. He was ready, as he showed with some deft touches and the smart dummy that enabled Eric Molloy to equalise. Teenagers aren't meant to be experts, except maybe in self-absorption. But Ferguson finishes like a 28-year-old, and his clever flick against Bournemouth on Tuesday was the latest addition to a portfolio of goals with an abnormal variety of serenity for a kid playing in the world's best league. I mean, what I love most is he doesn't have that, Stephen. He doesn't have that, oh God, I'm true on goal here, one on one, what do I do? It's just, what do I do?
It's like complete nonchalance, isn't it? I've seen him live a few times for Brighton, in the FA Cup game where he pulls that one down and slots in the bottom corner, unbelievable finish. But his presence and how much he's grown in the last 6 to 8 months, and not physically, but just in his presence in the game, his awareness of his position and into that team of Brighton, who they, the way they play, and you know the four players are in around them, Matomu, March, Caicedo and McAllister, like he couldn't really ask for more, four better players to have that are in form, to have feeding balls into him, running off him, and the awareness he has to lay it off, get in the box. He holds his position well. Yeah, he's such a bright spark, and you want to just whisper it, don't you? You don't want to say it too loud.
The secret's out.
I know, but it's almost don't tempt fate. We want this guy to be here for the next 15 years, so let's keep him at it. But he's progressing and he's excelling at a rate that far exceeds what anybody would have expected, I think.
Alan, when Brighton go to Spurs, how fascinating will it be seeing, I suppose, the comparison of Evan now and then one of the great modern number nines, Harry Kane?
Yeah, and I think that's something where obviously Evan might look at the likes of Harry Kane and try and model his game on, in terms of not just the game, I suppose, but the longevity and his professionalism that Harry Kane has had in the career so far. And he's been phenomenal, Harry Kane. You look at even this season, and I suppose Spurs, who have been so inconsistent, so up and down, a lot of turmoil on and off the pitch with the manager, yet he's just banging in the goals as he normally does, business as usual. And I think that's something that Evan Ferguson will obviously look towards. But I think tomorrow he's just probably concentrating on his own game. There's a lovely, like you're talking there about, how natural he looks in this environment, which I always said when I've been asked about him, that's the one thing that impresses me so much about him, is his temperament. He's so calm, so cool. And there was, I'm not sure if you've seen it on Twitter today, but I don't know, did it just come out today? But there's a little clip of him and his teammate, and he's been asked about his goals to minutes ratio, and I think it's just behind Haaland. And he's just sitting back, cool as a cucumber, and answering the question, more or less saying, wait till you see next year when I have a lot more games under my belt, and I'm starting from the start. start of the season. And he just he has such a lovely way about him as well, and so likeable that you just want to see the young lad go on and achieve. And so far, he's been absolutely fantastic.
Absolutely. I could spend all evening chatting about him and bigging him up, but unfortunately we have to rattle through other matches as well. I mentioned Frank Lampard there in my spiel about Evan Ferguson. Stephen, will Chelsea have that typical new manager bounce straight away, and how will Frank Lampard be received by the players?
New manager, all manager bounce. Yeah. That's how this is going to be.
New-ish.
Yeah, new-ish manager bounce, like Roy Hodgson. It's such a strange one for Chelsea to go back into Lampard. It's such a cliche. He knows the club. Yeah, of course he knows the club. He's played there, and he's got a lot of players there, and he did well with some of the younger players. And maybe the mindset is that they brought in a lot of young players, and Frank Lampard edged towards that because there was a transfer embargo. Maybe that's why they're thinking bring him in. But it just makes you think Chelsea don't really know what direction they're going to go in as a club. They haven't pinpointed, and you know, there's a few managers out there that you would think would be high up on the radar of gettable managers, that are, you know, Spurs are looking for one as well. So, you know, they're going to be in direct competition with another London rival for the top managers at the moment. But you think when Lampard goes in there, it's just going to be, he's not going to rip up trees with the way they play. He's just going to try and get the young players that are in, that haven't hit the ground running, confident. And if you can do that, then that Chelsea team have got a chance of beating anybody, because on paper, their team is off the charts. Like they could, Chelsea could win the Champions League this year. That's the reality, because on their players are technically that good. It's just they're so far off when it comes to consistency levels that it changes it. But, you know, Lampard, I think he just goes in there and his mindset is just to get them motivated. That's it.
Is it a free hit for Frank, Alan, or is this going to matter about where Frank Lampard manages next going forward in his career?
Yeah, well, if you had to ask me a few months ago where he will manage, I never would have said one of the elite top clubs again, Shane, because to be honest with you, things went so awry for him at Chelsea, and then you see one of the elite managers coming in, Tuchel, and turning, transforming the club overnight compared to what Lampard was doing. Then obviously he went to Everton, and I know Everton have had their troubles, but he was still long enough in the job to have them away from the relegation trouble that he had them in, and that was a nightmare. So the fact that he's got this opportunity again has me amazed. I saw him, obviously I was watching the game during the week, and I saw him up in the stand, the camera panned to him, and I thought to myself, oh, he's obviously out for a night back to his old club looking at the match. And the following day I'm reading he's linked with being the manager again. I couldn't believe it, and it has me baffled, to be honest with you. And you're talking there in terms of like what will he bring to Chelsea. I think he'll be just looking at it personally thinking this is an unbelievable chance for him to build a CV again, because if he does go in and do really well to the end of the season, all of a sudden his stock is on the rise again from being literally on the floor. So not only is it an opportunity in terms of maybe trying to get Chelsea back, I think it's an unbelievable chance for him to try and build himself back up again, and an opportunity that I'm sure he couldn't see coming his way either. I'd be with Stephen. When you think of the managers that are out there, elite level managers that the club can go for, how they've gone back to Frank, I just do not know. I know they have the players capable because of the squad of winning the Champions League, but I watched Real Madrid during the week and they were absolutely incredible. And if they beat Real Madrid next week, that's another one where I'm just ripping it all up and you won't see me on the
I'd rather you do that than sit in the fence, Collie, to be honest. Like, if you...
there you go, Shane, you know what you're getting from me.
Gentlemen, we do have to get on to the League of Ireland, but before we do, very briefly, Stephen, will Arsenal end their long wait, more than a decade without a win at Anfield this weekend?
No, I don't. Okay. I think Liverpool,
you can go a little bit more than that. I did say briefly.
I'm saying no just because I don't want Arsenal to win it. That's one thing. Is that just pure venom in my heart? No, but no, I'm saying no because Liverpool are so up and down. They've had a few poor results now. It wouldn't surprise me to pull a game out of bag. That's just the way Liverpool are. I don't think they can do it consistently, but they've got in them to do it every now and again, and they probably will do it at Anfield against Arsenal. That would sum them up.
Okay, well, it will be interesting to see how it goes. In a word then, Manchester United, Everton is the early kickoff. Stephen, who's going to win that?
Draw.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. I didn't give you that option, but however.
There you go.
Okay, let us chat League of Ireland. John Kenny is at Dalymount Park for one of two Dublin derbies this evening. Bohemians face Shamrock Rovers. JK, you have a bit of team news for us.
I do, yeah. Bohemians, perhaps the surprise leaders of this stage of the season, facing Shamrock Rovers on a fine spring evening here at Dalymount Park. Bohs manager Declan Devine has given his side a new broom. The squad has been torn to pieces, really. recreated, restructured, brought in some old returning players, helped the Gypsies to the top of the league. Rovers, fits and start to the start of the season, won their first game against Dundalk last week. Crisis, what crisis, said his manager after numerous draws. Don't discount Rovers, going for four in a row there. Perhaps like a bit of a wounded animal, but remember, it's very early in the season. Bragging rights and 3 points are for grabs, but there's a long way to go before we can write off the hoops. But this, because of their respective positions in the table, is one of the most anticipated Dublin derbies in a long time. And even if Bows win, they'd be 13 points clear of Rovers, with a lot to play for tonight over the remaining part of the season. Well, Bohemians are at full strength. Rovers, a couple of changes. Surprisingly, Johnny Kenny, who scored last week against Dundalk, on loan from Celtics, on the bench, as is the Ripico Lopez, their influential centre-half. The Estonian Mark Poom starts, and Dylan Watts returns to the Hoops midfield. The other games, UCD Shells, Pats against Cork, Dundalk against Sligo, and Derry face Drogs tonight, and all those kick off at 7.45, Shane.
Good stuff, JK. Thank you for that. Alan Colley, time is against us. I'm probably going to feel the wrath of League of Ireland Twitter, but we're just going to have to rattle through and give one-word predictions on the matches. So starting with Bohemians versus Shamrock Rovers, who's going to win that one, Al?
Draw.
Okay, I suppose that'd be okay for both.
It would be good for Bohemian, Shane. Yeah. Yeah, they've had a really good start, and it would be a good result for them.
Absolutely.
Really looking forward to the game. It's the best fixture in the calendar, so I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Derry City versus Drogheda United.
Derry
home win for them. Oriel Park then sees Dundalk host Sligo Rovers.
This is trickier because both teams have had a mixed start. I'm going to go a draw on this one as well, Shane.
Okay, Dundalk 2 points ahead of Sligo at the moment in third place. St. Pat's host Cork City in Inchicore.
St. Pat's, I think they might have turned things around there. Obviously, the late equaliser against Shamrock Rovers when everybody thought Tim might be losing his job, then the one again last week. So a good opportunity to keep that one winning run going, a home win.
Surprisingly, 8th versus 9th there. And then in 7th place, Shelburne play bottom of the table, UCD, in the other big Dublin derby of this evening, Alan Colley.
Shane, I know you asked me for one word, but I have to say you'll be delighted with this answer. Shelburne were brilliant last week. Probably the best I've seen them in a long, long time against Derry. Even with 10 men, they were fantastic. And hopefully they can build on that. They'll definitely, well, they should beat UCD tonight, but hopefully that'll be give them a lot of confidence going forward in the season, because I thought they were brilliant last week.
Hopefully. And then it's the Alan Colley Derby on Monday, of course, in Talca Park. Shell Sligo Rovers. So lots to look forward to.
I'll be at that.
Right, unfortunately, we're going to have to take a break, and we're going to be chatting racing up next. Alan Colley, thank you very much. Stephen Kelly, thank you very much. Jane Mangan's up next.
RTE 2FM.
Game on.
Racing.
Now, you're very welcome back to the final part of Game on this Friday evening. We will be checking in with Greg Allen at the Masters very shortly. But first, it is a big, big weekend for Irish racing, Jane Mangan. And you know what, Sada, we were going to go chronologically, but let's work our way back from the bank holiday Monday. A big event, the Irish Grand National.
Yeah, it's all happening this weekend. Shane, anybody who works in entertainment, hospitality, they'll all know that bank holiday weekends are the busiest during the week, during the year for them. And the Boyle Sports Irish Grand National on Easter Monday is where we'll all be at. The coverage will be covered on RTE Racing, and it looks a wide open race this year. Due off at 5 p.m. At Fairy House, obviously being the venue. The Devil's Coachman is currently the favourite for JP McManus and Noel Mead, but the Kimure winner at Cheltenham, Angel's Dawn, is hot on his heels in the market. Panda Boy for Martin Brazel, who hit the crossbar twice at Cheltenham, is next in. Stumptown, who got beaten at Cheltenham, he's in there. Last year's winner, Lord Lariat. Throw in the likes of, we could have a British Raider in Royal Pagai for Venetia Williams. You could have Busselton for Joseph O'Brien, and Am I Right for Henry de Bromhead. What this year's Irish Grand National does reflect is a lot of diversity.
Okay, we'll be interesting to see how that goes. We are working our way back, very, very much looking forward to the Grand National on Easter Monday. But on Easter Sunday, staying at Fairy House, there are two Grade Ones, the Gold Cup Novice Chase. And fair to say, I don't want to put words into your mouth, but probably the race of the day is the one a little bit earlier at 2:30.
Yeah, so the Honeysuckle Mare's Novice, the first grade one that Honeysuckle won, has been renamed in her honour, and it has attracted no less than 16 runners, many of them who lined up in the Mare's Novice at Cheltenham, and none of them actually managed to win because You Wear It Well, the British raider, the British horse for Jamie Snowden, got the job done at Cheltenham. But the second horse, Magical Zoe, Princess Zoe, Lot of Joy, Halka de Tauber, Harmonia Maker, they all lined up and they all reoppose again. Throw in Ashro Diamond, who didn't quite make it to Cheltenham. She's very intriguing. And the choice of Paul Townend from 8 Willie Mullins runners. I mentioned Princess Zoe. It'd be fantastic to see her. It's only her third hurdle start. You'd imagine the experience at Cheltenham will really have stood her in good stead. And Jessica Harrington's Jatara as well. That's a really deep race. The first running of the Honeysuckle Mare's Novice Hurdle. But the Willowarm Gold Cup, previously known as the Powers Gold Cup or the Ryanair Gold Cup Novice Chase, that's a very good race, due off at 4:55 on Sunday. 9 runners. We're going to see Mighty Potter, the horse that veered to his right on the run-in at Cheltenham, reoppose against Appreciated, who veered off to his left in the very same race, the two of them finishing second and third behind Stage Star and the Turners. Throw in Sir Gerhard, who probably didn't stay and probably didn't jump well enough at Cheltenham to get involved in the Brown Advisory. You got James de Burleigh, you got Adamantly Chosen and Flame Bearer as well. That's a very good novice chase. And it's not just happening at Fairy House this weekend, Shane. You've got 3 meetings over the weekend at Cork as well, where on Sunday the feature race for me would have to be the Bar One Racing Grade 3 3-mile chase. It's featuring Shaq and Persuas up to that distance for the very first time. A huge ride for Cork man Michael O'Sullivan. William Mullins also saddles Backison in the very same race, but you got Ronald Pump in there and the Little Yank. It's a small field, but a good one at that. The Beginner's Chase features A1 and Largy Debut. Largy Debut, it's hard to believe that he's still a beginner's at this time of the year. So that's a very good card on Sunday. And they'll have racing on Easter Monday as well, featuring some point-to-point races and point-to-point bumpers and hunter's chases. So I hope they'll get a crowd, but I'm sure Fairy House will as well, because this is what bank holiday weekends are all about. Good sport.
Absolutely. So that is the racing this weekend. But my final question to you, Jane. Gordon Elliott has offered Davy Russell a final ride on Galvin in the Aintree Grand National.
Yeah, look, I wouldn't even say it's Gordon Elliott that has offered it. I'd say, Davy, do you want to come back? It was completely, the cards were in Davy's hands if he wanted to do that. He picked up an injury at Cheltenham. He didn't ride since he was beaten on Pied Piper in the County Hurdle. It was high profile that he missed the ride at the 11th hour on Conflated in the Gold Cup. And there was a lot of talk and speculation post the Cheltenham Festival whether he would ride again. But his career has been one of those, you know, real star legendary careers, and he deserves better than to bow out the way Cheltenham finished. I believe he will ride Galvin in the Aintree Grand National, a race that has been very good to him with Tiger Roll, but I'd imagine he probably will take other rides at the Aintree meeting as well next week. So win, lose or draw for Davy, I hope he gets to go out with a smile on his face and do it the way he wants to do it, because I don't think anybody was satisfied with what happened at Cheltenham. And you know, the career he's had, the man that he's been, he deserves to go out on the biggest stage, on the biggest day, in the biggest race, and that is the Aintree Grand National.
Great stuff. Okay, Jane, I'm going off script, putting you on the spot. Give me one horse to look out for this weekend.
I hope my dad is a nice runner at Mallow on Sunday. He's a horse called Spillane's Tower in the, he's a 2-mile, 3 handicap hurdle, and I hope he gives us all something to cheer about this Easter weekend, and you know, something more than just chocolate to celebrate.
Here's hoping. Jane Mangan, thank you. Excuse me. Thank you very much. So we'll definitely be keeping an eye on that.
Game on.
Golf.
But we are going out the same way we came in, with Greg Allen at Augusta. Greg, last time we were chatting, Brooks Koepka was running, well, not running away, but he had a decent lead and we were a bit worried about the weather. What has changed since we last spoke?
Well, we've got grey skies instead of sunny skies, but still no sign of the bad weather that's forecast, although it's not due to come in until about 2 o'clock local time, which is imminent, 5 minutes away. So certainly grey skies now, and it does look as though the weather and the day is changing. But Brooks Koepka's in the clubhouse on 12 under par. He's quite happy if the conditions deteriorate, because he's now got a 4-stroke lead over the field. Round 65 yesterday, he was tied for the lead with John Rahm and Victor Hovland overnight. And then the 67 this morning, he benefited from an early tee time. And that early tee time, with Hovland and Rahm out, this afternoon in possibly substantially worse conditions, it could be a huge break of luck for Kepka. But he took his break. He eagled the eighth hole. He had birdied the second already, which was a par five. Eagled the par five eighth and birdied the two back nine par fives, the 13th and the 15th. There weren't any other birdies on his card, so he just really plundered the par fives. Five under par today for them, five under par for his round. And he looks imperious again. This is a guy who won four major golf championships in the last 7 years. He actually has the best record in the majors of any player in the world right now over the last 7 years with those four victories. And he's looking like the player that he was about 3 years ago. He had serious knee problems, dislocated his knee, tried to push it back himself and made the situation much worse. And as a result, he's had 2 years of recuperation. But now it's fully recovered and he looks awesome. That has to be said. He won on the LIV Tour last week, and here he is with a four-stroke lead in the Masters. Sam Bennett, the American amateur champion, is alone in second place on 800 par with back-to-back birdies on the 13th and 14th holes. He's alone in second place. Hovland has played three holes. He's 7-under. John Rahm has played two holes, two pars. He's 7-under. Colin Morikawa is alone in fifth place on 6-under. And then in the group on 5-under, Shane Lowry has just birdied the sixth. It's a par three down the hill. The pin is in a desperately difficult position on a ledge up on the right hand side of the green with a big fall off and swale down to the left. And if you're on that ledge, you've got a chance of birdie. If you're not up on that ledge, it's a really hard two putt, as Rory McIlroy found. He three putted that green, but Lowry hit it to 4 feet and hold the putt for birdie. And it's the second birdie of the day, bogey on the third as well. So Lowry 1-under for his round, tied for sixth place on 5-under par and going really nicely. Seamus Power, birdie the second, bogey the third. He is back on 1-over par. Matthew McLean, 5-over after 11. And I'm afraid the story of Rory McIlroy doesn't get any better. He is on 5-over par after 12 holes, 5 bogeys today, the 2nd, the 3rd, the 6th, the 7th and the 11th. We've seen this from McIlroy having a difficulty really over a, you know, when things don't go well from around Augusta. We've seen it in the past that this is a stiff, steep mental challenge for him after that performance back in 2011 when he had a good lead, 4-stroke lead going into the final round and shot a round of 80. And today sometimes the ghosts of Augusta come back and it looks like they've arrived back today, looking like he's going to miss the cut unless he can produce a slew of birdies over the last six holes. McIlroy on 5-over par, and that's all of 17 shots off the leader, Brooks Koepka, with Shane Lowry nicely placed on 5-under after six holes. And he is tied for sixth place.
Great stuff, Greg Allen. Nicely rounded up. We'll be checking in with Greg Allen over on Radio 1 on a very special Friday evening sports special. We have live commentary of Leinster versus Leicester. We'll be on air just before 8 p.m. for that one. Shane, big thanks to Andrew O'Connor for ensuring this evening's programme ran smoothly. Blatna Tracy is up next with the official chart show. But from all of the Game On team, it is bye for now. RTE 2FM.